Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today with Anthony Bongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
Anthony, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very good.
Fantastic.
Thanks for listening. We're here to talk about the movie Nope, which does not mean not of planet Earth.
Oh, I didn't even hear that.
That was one online thing, and like literally someone said it to Jordan Peele and he laughed at it. He was like, no.
Oh, that's an okay. That
the theories abound in his
yeah,
movies.
Yeah, I haven't looked. I purposely haven't looked at too many things, just like you have not.
Yes, yes. I saw the movie last Sunday with Jen. Mm-hmm. And would you see it?
I saw it last Friday by myself.
Yeah, it's about a year. It came out about a week ago.
It was a year ago, yeah. It came out about a week ago. And I texted you that you must see it.
Now, you and I both, of course, like everyone, liked Get Out. Mm-hmm. It was a revelation. This sketch comedian makes this horror movie that, and you kind of like, all right. And then it's like amazing. And then all of a sudden, now he's a horror movie guy.
Yeah.
And then we both did not like Us.
I have yet to meet a person in real life who did like Us.
But what's interesting...
But it got great reviews and made a lot of money, I
know,
think.
But I've talked to some really smart people about Us and like torn it asunder. I think, we don't need to relitigate Us, but I think, and we've said this before, it's too literal. If it had just stepped back a few degrees in terms of its representation and allowed things to be more figurative and be more sort of out there, it would all go down much easier.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think when I was talking about how Nope, I really like Nope, and I thought it was a big improvement over Us, which was, I think, his sophomore slump.
Yes, absolutely.
And I said I think that Us would have benefited from being a smaller story like Nope is.
Yeah.
And I think it was just like Get Out was a huge success, so it was like, here's all the money, do something huge.
Right.
And it would have benefited from being more symbolic rather than like half-baked literal explanations
right.
of like who the tethered are and where they live. And
right.
It kind of made sense, but also really didn't make any sense.
Right, exactly. Right, and I think Nope really works because it doesn't answer questions. If Nope tried to go out of its way to, like, I don't know, make things concrete, mm-hmm. and be like, oh no, the monster jean jacket is just the reincarnation of the monkey or whatever it is. Like, you
right.
know what I mean? Like, then we'd all be like, eye-rolling no. But because it doesn't do that, it works very well. Although, the internet is full of people that, you know, I love internet movie culture, but a lot of it is, you know, ending explained.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a million ending explained videos that are all like, you know, it's all easy stuff. It's all like, here's a look, it's all biblical, or look,
right.
it's all this, or look.
And they never, there's never the caveat that that's just one interpretation.
Right. No, it's always like, I've unlocked it.
Yeah. And it's also very like solipsistic. Like, this is the one meaning that it has.
Yeah. I figured it out, and yeah. now you're going to know it. And now we all crack the code, and it's not that at all.
Yeah. Should we start with a synopsis?
Yeah.
For the gang who hasn't seen it yet?
Sure. And we should say spoiler alerts for everything.
Spoilers abound.
Yeah.
So, Nope, synopsis. Two siblings who run a California horse ranch discover something wonderful and sinister in the skies above, while the owner of an adjacent theme park tries to profit from the mysterious otherworldly phenomenon.
Yeah.
So that's like a really short synopsis. I think it's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Do you want to... All right. So let's right out of the gate talk about spoilers.
Yeah.
So the big spoiler is... What you think is a mm-hmm. UFO is actually itself an animal. It looks like a UFO, and I guess you could take it to mean that all the UFOs we've seen in history were these animals.
Yeah, that got me. I was really shocked by that.
You see, I kind of felt like I don't know if I saw mm-hmm. that coming, but in a lot of interviews, people like, oh, wow, they ruined the movie in the trailer. And Jordan Peele would be like, not exactly. So I kind of was ready for it to not be a UFO. Okay.
Well, I did. Once he said it, I was like, oh, it kind of looks like a stingray.
Yeah, it does.
And that's like the, because the stingray's mouth is a little hole underneath it.
Yeah. Just like that. Okay.
And it kind of swims through the air. Right. And then at the end, it weirdly turns into like a parachute-y thing. Yeah. I don't know. That was a lot. I felt like I was having a fever dream toward the end when it started shape-shifting. But no, I was surprised by that because I thought for sure like, oh, okay, this is a ship, right? It looks like a ship. And whatever. And I didn't even think of what you just said, which is interesting, which is that the explanation for all UFOs would be that they're all animals in this.
They're all this.
Of this breed. Yeah.
Right.
Which are just, I guess, animals that feed on us.
Yeah.
And just like swim around the earth, float around the earth, and eating people. Yeah.
Right. And so we'll get into some of the themes. There's a lot of themes in this movie. There's a lot of motifs, visual motifs. Looking is a big motif. The politics of looking, who gets to look. The protagonists live and run a horse ranch for movies.
Great performances. Love Kiki Palmer. Daniel Kaluuya is amazing also.
Yes, he's very good. He was most he's such like a sort of like solemn, quiet kind of presence, but he was the most like vibrant in this movie than I think he's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one who says nope, I think twice.
I think multiple
least.
People say nope, don't they?
Yeah, it's like that. I got a bad feeling about this.
Yeah. Nope. When he sees the thing hovering over his car and he gets out. I was in a theater that wasn't too crowded, but when he did that, everybody was laughing hysterically. Yeah.
There's some good moments of comedy, and, you know, it ends, spoiler alert, it ends with none of the main characters dying. It actually has a happy ending, and the happy ending made me rethink the whole movie, because I'd been thinking of the movie as like this really scary movie, but now that I've seen the ending, I see it more as an adventure.
Yeah, I texted you after I first got out of it, and this is my first movie that I've ever seen by myself, so I...
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was a big step for me.
Isn't it wonderful, freeing?
It is very freeing, and I felt like I could really be in the movie in a way that I've never been before. But I remember texting you, like, it's Spielbergian.
Well, Jordan Peele has given a list of movies that influenced this movie.
Is Close Encounters on there?
Of course.
Yeah.
But Jaws is on there, and I feel like it's very Jaws. Jean Jacket... The monster is like the shark from Jaws.
It's just here it's just here to eat.
Yeah. It's a Leviathan. And even the way they kill it at the end where they get it to eat a balloon and explode is a lot like the way the shark explodes in Jaws.
Yeah.
So actually I have a list of some of the movies that he said inspired this movie. Arrival.
Okay, I've never seen that.
I've actually never seen it either. Signs.
I was getting a sign. I felt like it was giving Signs.
Yeah, you know, Signs.
But it's a way better movie than Signs.
Yeah, when Signs first came out, I really loved it. And then as I became more of an atheist, I found myself like kind of like rejecting how pious it is, because it's very, very pious. But I've kind of swung back around on it is probably. Other than Sixth Sense, it's probably his best movie in terms of suspense.
It's now I feel like it's just like a meme. Like it's the best jump scare of all time. The alien just walking the across video. The screen in the video. Yeah,
right.
That's great.
Jaws, a Western, African American Western called Buck and the Preacher, which is actually a poster of it in their house.
Mm-hmm.
The Wizard of Oz.
Okay, where did you? Okay, did you see that?
He said that.
But did you see that?
The balloon is like Wizard of Oz.
Oh, okay.
A little bit the desert and the house.
Mm. Well, it is like a house in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay, I could see that.
There's this stuff you can pull from it. And Close Encounters are the third kind.
Yeah, that I definitely saw.
Which is a big one.
Yeah.
Which is a big one. All right, so let me just get this off my chest.
Please do.
In the film... The very interesting conceit is that the two main characters, what are their names? Their actual character names. Oh, OJ and Emerald. They are the great, 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 great grandchildren of the African-American performer who rode on a horse in the first Edward Muybridge film.
And they make up a name. That's not his real name.
Right, because we really don't know who he is. I hate to be this guy.
Oh, I knew you were going to do this.
It's just not... It's just... we keep saying it's a film, and it's not. It was not a film. It was still images.
Okay, but
it was never even shown as a film.
Isn't it?
It was significant because at that time, it took like a minute to expose a picture. That's why no one used to smile in old pictures.
Right.
Because you'd have to stand there still for a minute. So people, you know, there was an argument at the time of how do horses run? Is there a point where horses have all four hooves off the ground? Mm. Or does that not happen? There was no way to know. You needed to create a medium to slow down time to answer this question that the naked eye couldn't answer. Mm-hmm. So it's significant because Muybridge figured out a way to snapshot an image instantly. So they're not motion pictures, they're pictures of motion, which is very significant. But we you know, like all history, we misremember it and we try to make it more sense in our context. It was not the first film.
They were never like presented in quick succession so that it looked like moving.
No, but they traced it on like glass and did that. But it wasn't those images. It was a tracing of the horse in those images.
That's interesting. Okay. Because I do remember learning about it as technically being the first motion picture.
No, it's... It was always...
So now this is a house of cards that has fallen apart. Now I hate this movie and it makes no sense.
No, it's okay. It's no. Okay.
Okay.
No, that...
I knew you were going to come with some factoid about
well,
this.
Well, the real first like actual moving picture was the Round Day Garden scene by Louis Le Prince in 1888. Now, the Muybridge images were earlier and they led to what would be film. It's pre-film history. So okay. It's still significantly important. But it's
like we wouldn't have film without that work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's interesting in the movie because it ties it all ends up being about movie history and black people in the history of movies. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Peele ties them to this very first performer, this unnamed first performer in movies, air quotes. Mm-hmm. And like they're like kind of struggling to get by. Because they don't necessarily say CG, but
like
it seems like they're just no one cares for what they do anymore.
Yeah, I feel like it's heavily implied that like practical effects and working with animals is something that
right.
we don't do as much in film anymore because of CG.
Right. And also the Western genre is way less prevalent than it was in the past.
Right.
So let's...
So they are...
Yeah.
They are his descendants.
Yeah.
And there's one argument that I did see that I was thinking before I even saw it reflected elsewhere. I think it was on Vox. Their interpretation was that one of the themes or meanings of this movie really is about the contributions of black filmmakers mm-hmm. and contributions of black people to cinema being ignored.
Yeah.
And you know, you swept under the rug and sort of they're not being honored for anything.
Right.
And that you see it even within the fact that they are in the film industry and they come from a long line of people who have been in the film industry in their house. They have like all posters of black movies that have been forgotten by time. Yeah. And I think that's really, he was definitely thinking about that.
Right. Right. And we should say their dad, who dies in the beginning, is played by Keith David, who was in a lot of good alien movies himself. He's in They Live.
Mm-hmm.
He's in John Carpenter's The Thing.
He dies by, spoiler alert, the creature.
Yes.
Are you going to correct me?
No. I just have a point.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
The creature like regurgitates things that it can't gestate.
Right.
And a nickel kills him.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Right.
He looks up because it's like spitting out the things that it can't digest.
Mm-hmm.
And a nickel goes through his eyeball.
Right.
And kills him.
So the first popular movies in America were Nickelodeon.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Movies. And this is the ignoring of audiences, not necessarily people who make movies, but movies were not thought of as important, but then they became financially viable through Nickelodeons in all the big cities. Like around 1908 to 1911, it was huge, and they would go be seen by poor people, immigrants, people that didn't speak English, you know, and there were these tiny, shabby little theaters, you know, and the owners would go through with like perfume and like, you know, get the smell of the filthy Irish out. And and once movies became popular, they took that relevance that was given to them by the working class and rejected them by making these huge theater houses that now cost like more than 5 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So like movies were unimportant until working lower class people made them important.
Right.
And then it was sort of taken away from them.
And then I could be wrong about this, but in those Nickelodeons, weren't there often like black people playing the piano?
Yeah. Well, you would often have...
For the crowd.
Silent movies were never ever like silent. There was always... There would either be...
musical accompaniment.
Yeah. There would be in some places like... Going back to like the very first public screenings of film and like... cafes in France with the Lumiere films, there'd be just somebody like tinkering on a piano.
Mm-hmm.
Some films would have what they call a lecturer, where someone would actually narrate the movie with the movie.
The silent film?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Okay.
And remember, silent films didn't have language, so like immigrants that didn't necessarily speak English could all watch these films and sort of get something out of it.
Right.
The father's name is Otis, right?
Yeah, because he's Otis Jr.
Right.
Which, that's a funny gag.
Right, right. I was going to ask you about that. His name is OJ, and at one point, he's introduced, he's on a film set, and he's introduced as OJ, and this, like, old white actress is like, she's, like, taken aback by the fact his name is OJ, and...
I don't know if there was supposed to be any resonance to that, like, if there's anything deeper than that just being a gag, or what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's certainly a gag, but of course it's way too big to everything is a significance in, I think, Jordan Peele's films. And OJ was, before a known murderer, like a very, very famous black
and also person. When he was then see now I'm thinking that I'm there he has thought about this because OJ's trial was also like the first trial that was like watched by the whole world.
Right, it was a spectacle.
Right, and the spectacle is in that quote. The film opens with a quote.
Yes, it's...
Like The Wizard of Oz. Oh, there's another connection. So it opens with like a quote. The screen is black and there's a quote. And it's from the Bible, but it's about the spectacle destroying us.
I will cast abominable filth upon you, make you vile, and make you a spectacle. That's the quote that it begins with. Nahum? Nahum?
Yeah, it's apparently it's one of the lesser 3-6. Known books of the Bible.
But it's so interesting. I will cast the abominable filth upon you, make you vile, make you a spectacle.
Yeah.
So the idea of spectacle, like obviously the OJ trial is a spectacle.
Yeah.
Cinema is a spectacle.
There's a lot about, like you said, for looking and being looked at and the power in looking, but also it's like viewership. Like something is only real when it's got a lot of viewers. Right. And even the Jupiter, the guy who owns the ranch.
Yeah.
He thinks that it's a ship.
Yeah.
And he says, we call them the viewers because they're always watching us.
Right, right, right.
And he tries to gain power off of being viewed. And he was a child actor.
And I saw somebody on Reddit. Again, I tried to stay away from things, but it's hard to. I saw somebody on Reddit, and maybe other people too, made this point that, and we'll get into Cordy, but we get to this point that when Jupe, when he's a kid.
His name is Jupiter, but for short, they call him Jupe.
When he was a kid.
Also, his name being Jupiter is,
right.
Makes you think of like space.
When he was a kid, he was on a sitcom in the 90s where a chimpanzee went crazy and killed a lot of this, ripped the face off of his co.
And the film opens with that.
Right. And they keep flashing back to that. But he was staring at the chimpanzee the whole time. So somebody made the point that he feels like staring, like he feels he has the right to look, or like looking protects him. But he ends up being wrong because looking at the monster ends up being his undoing.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, that's the most disturbing sequence. We find out at the beginning that he's buying horses from our protagonist. And then we it's a little bit later in the movie that we find out that he is aware of the monster.
Yeah, he's using them as
feeding them.
Yeah, he's using them as bait.
And he's like doing these shows. And he does this show and he's got his co-star from the show there and she's got a veil over her face.
So nobody can see her face.
Right. Which is, you know, I know that really happens to people, but it is
the way it's shot
and presented. It's disturbing.
It's unsettling.
People who've had that happen to them have a greater strength than I will ever have.
Yeah.
Just recently, I saw a news thing where, like, this 20-year-old girl who, like, was babysitting some, and like a dog bit her face off. God. And it's, you know, so
but I there's just so the much in alone. That too, like being disfigured, people don't want to look at you.
And, right. She's no longer a spectacle.
Right. Yeah. Right?
He even makes a joke like the first girl I had a crush on.
Yeah.
And, so like, it's not even a big crowd, but there's a little crowd there. Cause it's not like Disney World. It's like a little ranch with like
no, carnival yeah, games. you get the idea that he's kind of desperate, right? And he's kind of like a snake oil salesman.
Right. And before he was on that sitcom with the chimpanzee, he was in a show where he was like a little cowboy, which is like what he's trying to like, milk.
Yeah.
So,
which the poster for kind of looks like the poster for Holes.
Yes, you can
like recreate it, and that ends up coming in clutch, like in the climax.
Right.
Where you can like look down a well, and a camera will snap a picture of
you. Yeah, right. That image of Holes, even like the vinyl records that they're constantly playing in the house, like, that repeats over and over.
Yeah.
But anyway, get into what I was saying. Like he's like, look, let's all look at the viewers, and the viewers come down and suck them up, and then we see them. In this wonderfully shot.
So weird.
They're just, I guess, in its throat or in its esophagus being swallowed, and you hear them all screaming.
Yeah.
And they're terrified, and they're like stacked on top of one another. And it's really, really, it's filmed in super close up. So you can't really ever see exactly what's going on, but you know this is inside the monster.
It's really like doing.
Super disturbing.
Yeah, it's really like doing a lot with nothing. Because it's essentially.
Obfuscation is such a big thing in this movie.
Essentially, you just see them like it almost looks like they're just pressed between sheets.
Right.
Or something. And you could tell they're getting sucked upward.
Right.
And it sounds, but it feels they're terrified or it's very painful for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And you just. It is really disturbing.
That's after
the opening sequence with the monkey with the chimp, right. Which is very disturbing.
Yeah, I'd say that's to me is the most disturbing scene. There's scarier scenes, but that's the most like disturbing. Which I think he's good at. I remember
he's really good at blending like really really scary disturbing shit with really funny stuff. Like the bit with the the praying mantis.
Yeah,
on the camera was so funny. I love when Kiki Palmer was like, "He better pray I never find him again."
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they like have the perfect shot of this thing coming down and there's a praying mantis just looking in the camera and it won't move.
Right. But what's funny is it first is a jump scare.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
When it puts his little praying mantis. And it's
looking
mantis,
at you.
Right.
Yeah.
And like the theater's like, oh shit. And then you realize it's just a praying mantis on the camera. And I don't know if this is, maybe I'm just stretching. Keep
pray, I never find him.
I might be stretching, but film fans might know that when they originally made the movie Predator, the monster was just a giant praying mantis and it looked like a fucking Power Rangers episode. And they were like, this movie is going to fail unless we make a much better monster. So they created the Predator that we now know today.
I didn't know
But if you look at like, you can look at like behind the scenes footage of the original Predator, it's just like Arnold Schwarzenegger and then like a guy dressed like a big praying mantis. It's awful.
What about the fact that there's so much reference to the Scorpion King, which is a real Rock movie,
right?
And he wears the jacket from the when he was on the set that says the Scorpion King, and then the guy from TMZ calls him Scorpion King,
right?
It's like it's like these weird
because he worked on it with his dad,
right? And it's just so funny because it's like these code names like Jean Jacket and Scorpion King,
right.
Like really funny,
right?
But he's like Scorpion King. What is he? He says something to him like, don't you want to stand out or don't you want to be known for something? The TMZ guy says.
Yeah.
Because the TMZ guy like doesn't want to leave. He wants to get a good shot of it. It's all about getting a good. We haven't talked about that. It's all about getting struggle. It on film. Like no one will believe them until they get it on film.
Right.
And they have this whole discussion of how UFOs, nobody's ever really cashed in on UFOs because every shot we've ever had of UFO has been blurry and shitty.
Yeah.
And, you know, they come from a film background. So they're like, all we need is to get the good shot. They call it the Oprah shot.
Yeah.
Of it. And then they end up, skipping ahead, they end up getting it, but on an old-fashioned camera at the end.
Right. But then that guy is compelled to destroy himself and the footage.
Yeah.
He, like, goes crazy and he allows it to eat him.
Yeah, because they pick up a filmmaker who says, I can get the shot for you. And then, weirdly, he gets it on an old... So it powers down anything electronic when it flies
so
overhead.
So it's got to be a hand-crank
camera. So it had to be a hand-crank camera. This old-school filmmaker guy... is like, I can get it for you on an old school camera. He gets it, but then, all of a sudden, he's like, what does he say to them? He's like, sometimes you can't get the shot or something.
Something crazy.
Something like it's not worth it to show this to the world.
Right.
And then he sacrifices his life to get, I don't know if he wants, see, he's still cranking it when he's getting sucked up. Like, is he trying to film it still?
I guess.
Very much like the Ahab.
Yeah. Character. Yeah. Yeah.
If we're doing like the Jaws comparison.
Oh yeah. Like,
he's Quint. Like, I'll get you a Quint. Right. Why did I say Ahab? Is that his name?
Well, Ahab is Moby Dick.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the same Quint, archetype.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'll get you your fish. Like, it's, I'll get you your shot. I can get it for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, he is like the Quint.
Yeah.
Because he's also like gruff.
And he dies. He gets eaten by it.
Right, just like Quint does.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. It's interesting. See, to me, it's like, this is what's interesting about films like this, is the sort of like, you know, intellectual miasma you sort of find yourself in. I think young critics or young people, whatever, they want to like... I don't know. They want to like get the meaning of it. I think I made this. I've quoted this before, so I'm repeating myself.
About poetry?
Yeah, the poetry. Yeah. Like the Billy Collins said that his poetry students want to tie a poem to a chair and beat it with a hose until it explains itself. Like, that's what people want to do with.
Yeah. What does it mean?
Jordan
yeah.
Peele movies. Like as if Jordan Peele would be like, okay, it's about movies and then we're all gonna be like, oh, okay.
Right.
Now we don't have to think about it. It's about everything. It's a, you know.
Yeah.
Things carry meaning, but they can be sort of floating signifiers that, you know, are interesting in the double meanings they have.
What do you make of the scene where the brother and sister are talking to Jupe and Kiki Palmer? What's her name? Emerald?
Yeah.
She's like, what?
Emerald City.
Yeah.
Wizard of Oz.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that. Where she's like, what happened on the set? And he's like, did you ever see the SNL skit based on it? And he explains it.
Yeah.
Through explaining the SNL skit.
Right.
That's a really odd.
It's interesting. Exchange. And he's also acting like he's very excited by
it. Yeah. And like, it's really funny.
Clearly, yeah. When it's clearly something
really
that
traumatic.
Traumatic to him. Yeah. Right. And it's also like.
He's like, you know, he's talking about, what's his name?
Chris Kattan.
Chris Kattan. He's like, and Kattan is killing it.
Which is
as
so
Gordy.
Funny.
And it's like, this should be so traumatic right. for you.
It's so funny because Chris Kattan is, you know, he's not the best remembered SNL cast member.
Right.
We saw it at the Alamo Draft House, and Alamo Draft House always shows you things before the film that are related.
So they were showing Chris Kattan was there.
They were showing Mango sketches.
Oh, okay.
Where he played like the monkey guy. Like
yeah.
So that was in my head while we were watching. And I was like, are they trying to invoke Mango?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Remember he would like eat the apple?
Yes, yeah. I was thinking, I forgot his name was Mango, but I was thinking like he played some kind of like simian character.
Yeah. But it goes back to the spectacle thing. Like this horrible thing that happened in Jupiter's life, he finds a way to, the way he deals with it is he has this old little like museum of stuff
right.
from it.
But it's like a coping mechanism. Like right. he doesn't have to deal with it if he describes it as
an SNL sketch. Right. Instead of what really happened.
Right. Okay. So I see the connection between the Gordy and the creature as, you know, like you trying to tame nature,
right.
Trying to, you know, tame animals that can't be tamed and, you know, whatever.
Right. And that also relates to the horse in the beginning, right? Yeah. They spooked the horse on
yes,
the film set.
Yes.
And he says, don't look the
and
horse
did you notice
the
that the thing that they used, it looks exactly like the TMZ guy's helmet?
Yeah, yeah. The
orb.
Yeah.
Did you? I was fine with it, but I felt like other people in the audience wanted there to be a stronger connection, or at least a more explicit connection between Gordy
right.
and
right.
the creature, like or Jean Jacket. Like, what do you think of that? And the shoe standing.
Right, that's the one thing that I can't figure out.
I can't figure it out either. Because, almost like an equinox thing, where like it stands at an impossible angle.
Right, right. Well. I guess we should describe some of that scene. You know, it's a 90s sitcom that looks a lot like Alf or the yeah. Harry and Henderson sitcom. It's like they live with a chimpanzee. Well,
Harry and the Hendersons, yeah.
And it's like his birthday party. And, you know, they open up a thing in balloons. And again, balloon as a motif,
mm-hmm.
like Wizard of Oz. A balloon pops, which I guess sets it off.
Yeah, he goes crazy.
And this really happens, by the way. And I'm happy this movie showed it because chimpanzees have had it too good for too long.
we need to cancel chimpanzees.
This has really happened. Like, this is somewhat based on
something sets?
Yes. Like,
were there supposed to be dead people in the studio audience? I was trying to look behind, and it's right. kind of fuzzy, but it looked like there were bodies in the studio audience
right.
as well.
I think a lot of them... See, I wasn't sure about that either, because they say people ran, But so I don't know if it was like clothes or
what. Yeah, it looked like there was something.
It's weird because you feel, you sort of, you enter in media res and it's like a TV sitcom set, but it's silent. And you hear like, again, he's obfuscation. Pounding. He's like beating the woman who played the mother into like paste.
Yeah. And he's got blood all over his face.
Right.
The chimp. And you see the shot is from like a low angle. And then you find out later that it is the POV shot of Jupiter hiding under a table, watching it.
Right. Yes, Jen.
I think he wasn't looking at the champ. I think he's looking at the shoe, and that's what saves him. Because he's not looking it in the face. Whereas everyone else is like trying to stop the champ talking to him. So they're looking at him. Like the way...
Okay.
That's what saves.
Jen says... Oh, that's interesting, because then Daniel...
Let me repeat it first.
Yeah.
The shoe is standing.
Right.
He's staring at the shoe standing.
Right.
He never really looks at him, because I watched it over.
Yeah.
All right, let me repeat it, because that's not going to come out. Jen brought up a good point where maybe he's not looking, maybe Jupiter's not looking at Cordy the chimpanzee. Maybe he's looking at that shoe that was sort of standing up oddly. Because we do see that shoe later on in his little museum, and by looking at the shoe, he's not looking at the animal, which again, not looking directly at the animal is like what saves him. At some point, OJ realizes to not look at the monster, and it won't eat them if you don't look at it. Jupe's eyes are covered by the tablecloth,
which acts like a veil, which right. then is like called back later with the veil
of the actress.
Yeah.
Also, they pound. Him and the monkey pound, which reminds me of Birth of Man. You know, like the which we've seen, like, you know, in a lot of other movies like E.T. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is true. I read this somewhere. I think it's on the
also just like the combination of the chimp and then the shoe standing up by itself. I was getting like 2001 Space Odyssey kind of vibes.
Yeah.
Almost like the monolith
there. Yeah, I feel like there is more going on in that scene than is totally explained to us. But I understand. I do feel like probably people want there to be like more direct. You know, people want shit to be easier, I guess.
It's interesting because while you're looking that up, the jean jacket, the creature doesn't have eyes. Right. But then when its little mouth thing finally comes out, it's like a camera.
Right. We even in the opening credits, you see, you don't realize what you're looking at, but you're seeing down its like digestive tract.
Yeah.
And then at the very bottom of it, there's like a little screen, like a little, almost like the like, you know, I forget what it's called, but like the little recording screen, like in a camera.
Yeah.
And that you see the picture of the, you know, the Edmund Muybridge guy and the horse.
Yeah.
So and even when it unfurls at the end, it looks like canvas. It looks like a movie screen.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. It looks kind of like, it's like a parachute. It's weird, like, because it appeared throughout most of the movie to be like, I kept thinking like a stingray, like fleshy, but right. like a disc. But then it opens up towards the end and it's like made up of like very thin material that is like canvassy,
right?
Or like a balloon itself,
right.
It's odd. And then the shot that she gets of it at the end, it's like fully extended with like wings out.
Yeah, I know. Which, why does it do that?
Right, it's weird. And then I read something that did say like you have to wonder if it's supposed to be a big moment in the film where she finally gets the shot. But it's like, but at the end of the day, anybody would look at that and be like, oh, well, she doctored it. It's just a still photograph of God knows what.
But it's very fascinating, that whole thing, because we set up earlier in the film that they've got this like wishing well at this park. And when you like put a quarter in it, it takes a picture of you looking down in it.
Yeah.
Which I guess recreates that holes like poster for the show.
Yeah.
And in the end, she uses that to take a picture of it.
Right. But she's got to time it just right.
And
you got to spin a wheel for it to go. Right.
It's really interesting. Okay. So I don't know if this is true. This is an IMDb, which is not a reliable source. But apparently, before before Gordy is shot, supposedly it's sign languages to Jupiter what happened family.
Oh my God, that's heartbreaking.
Which you can see it. I thought, even before I read that, I thought it was sign something, because it seems to be signing something.
What happened, family?
So, like, he blacked out?
Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe something was coming through him.
Like, he was triggered by those...
I don't know.
The balloon snapping.
Yeah. The scene where... When we're shown it again through Jupiter's point of view under the table, and it's very silent, and you don't know where the chimpanzee is, and the chimpanzee's like coming closer to him, and he's looking right at the camera. I think that was the most tense scene in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the most disturbing scene, the most tense scene, and the scariest scene. Most disturbing scene is inside the belly of the monster.
Yeah.
The most tense scene is Jupiter with Gordy. And the scariest scene is the fake out where the kids, Jupiter's kids from their like little park dress up like aliens and come into their ranch and they're like in the stalls.
Yeah.
That was the scariest shit.
Because at that point, you're still thinking that this is a ship.
And it's going to be like little gray aliens.
Yeah.
And it's so... It's even hard to explain it because they move in such weird ways that like... It's one of those things where like something's there, but you don't realize it's there until it moves.
Until it moves.
And then it's moving in this real weird way. And then he's like, nope, 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 nope. And then he starts to back up. And then like it's really... There's like nothing for a while. And then you see like a head.
Slowly peek out.
Yeah, that reminded me a little bit of Signs too. And it ends up being a fake out, but I thought that was a scariest scene. What about
the thing, like, I guess, like, regurgitates and just, like, rains blood onto the house?
Yes!
That was insane, too, and that was, like, very Amityville Horror.
Yeah, and it felt like, conscious on the part of the monster.
The monster,
we should say, he names the monster Jean Jacket because they had a horse when they were kids called Jean Jacket. That was supposed to be Emerald's horse, but then they needed it for a movie or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was supposed to be the first horse she ever trained, right?
Right, and then they ended up using it. Maybe it was, I don't know what for. Maybe it was the Scorpion King. So Jean Jacket ends up being what they name the monster. And what's interesting, the movie breaks itself up into chapters based on the animal names. Like the names of horses.
I felt so bad for those horses.
Yeah.
And then you hear hear the horse's scream.
Like he's like, I've never heard a horse.
I've never heard a horse make a sound like that.
Because it's fucking sucked up into
those
the air.
Shots where it's like nighttime and you see all the stars and it's very quiet. Like that was where I was like, this is very Spielberg.
Yeah.
And the score is kind of like that adventure score, almost like John Williams-y. Yeah.
Well, when
it's not really a horror.
I feel like maybe like Jaws, it begins as a horror and then becomes more of an adventure. Because once OJ's like on the horse, like there's very like Western kind of music.
Yeah.
And
then he has the hero shot at the end when he shows up on the horse and she thinks he's dead.
Yeah.
And he shows up alive standing on the horse.
Right.
And he's right underneath something. What does that say above his head?
It's Jupiter's claim. It's like...
There's a saying there. It's something like... it's like
something
he's...
spacey.
Yeah, like...
out of this world?
He's framed right... Yeah, out of this world or something.
Yeah.
He's framed by it.
Yeah, and that's like a big hero shot.
Yeah.
And then you also have Emerald on the bike that she steals from the TMZ guy. And there's a complete... perfect, gorgeous, obvious homage to Akira where she does the famous like turns the bike and slides with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like literally the exact same framing. Yeah, it does get adventure-y. Let's talk about the TMZ guy because we've mentioned him a few times. He's also interesting too.
We also don't know if he's actually from TMZ.
Right,
she says TMZ's here.
Yeah.
Because the guy shows up and he's obviously there to take... He's wise to what's happening. He's there with a camera.
Well, I feel like...
You never see his face. He's wearing a silvery helmet where you look at him, you just see yourself back.
But at first, we don't know what he is. He's got this weird silvery helmet. He's very quiet. Mm-hmm. He sort of comes out of nowhere. Everyone's sort of spooked. I feel like Jordan Peele is really good at making anything, even mundane things...
Eerie
and suspenseful and just a little bit wrong. Right. Like...
Uncanny.
Yeah, his helmet being a perfect mirror.
Yeah,
it's not real. It's weird, and then he's talking, and you're kind of like, do I know that voice, or do I not know that voice? And then she says it's TMZ, which you're right, he never says it. But we do see he's
got a camera.
Yeah, and he tries to get a shot of the monster, but he doesn't realize that he's on an electric bike, and when he gets into the range of the monster, his bike's gonna just stop and he's gonna fly, and he flies and breaks his leg or whatever,
and that's played for a laugh.
Yeah,
I think.
But then as he's like about to die, OJ's trying to save him and he's like, no, get the camera. It's like,
yeah,
he wants the shot so bad.
Yeah.
And again, TMZ is all about spectacle. It's all about getting the shot. Yeah, it's
like nobody will believe you until you have it on film.
It's interesting because there are things like this, and you saw this a lot in Hitchcock movies too, like Rear Window, where you wonder if the theme is movies itself are immoral. Like, movies are bad.
Like, they're a filthy spectacle.
Yeah, like, you know, the philosopher Slavoj Žižek says cinema is the most perverted art form because it doesn't give you what you desire. It tells you what to desire.
Well, it's also, like, it makes me think of that whole thing of, like, you go and see the Grand Canyon and the first thing you do rather than look at it is try to capture it on your camera so you can keep it and take it with you. And it's almost like it's egotistical.
Right.
Like, I want it for myself.
It's interesting that you say keep it, though, because it's, like, capturing something, right? Yeah.
It's like holding a captive.
Right. And clearly, even though it's not really what happened, clearly Peel is very interested by the idea that the first moving images are of a black person that is not getting credit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's...
So, of course, that goes into our history of slavery.
Yeah.
And things like that.
And there's little thing, like the thing that I noticed, I've only seen it once. I think you've only seen it once, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure when we watch it again, there'll be so much more.
Sure.
But there's that little scene, that little like interstitial scene of where there's no speaking when they're staying over their friend's house from the electronics store. And they're just one of them sitting there. I don't remember which one. And the other two are just playing virtual reality and they have headsets on.
Yes, that's.
And it's just there's no reason for that to be there other than to make you think about like virtual reality.
Right. And OJ's not interested in it.
Is OJ's the one not wearing it.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's... Well, we haven't talked about this character yet. There's the character of the kid who works at, like, the
store. It's like Sam Goody or something.
Right. I think it is a real place, or was a real place. What's his name? He's sort of an annoying character, but you begin to like him a little bit.
I like him.
Angel. Right. Mm-hmm. So, Angel, right. He works at this store, and they go to buy these, like... security cameras and you know, he's like, he basically is like, oh, let me install them for you. And they're like, fine. And then like, as they're installing them, you know, they're aimed down at the land and they're like, can you just aim it up? And he realized like, they're all aiming towards the sky and he realizes what they're doing. And then you realize that he himself is like really into the conspiracies of it. And he's really into the whole thing. And he talks about that they change UFOs. They don't call it that anymore. They
APIs or something.
Yeah, aerial phenomenon or something. Which I do remember. Yeah.
Sorry.
What?
Points out the cloud that it's not moving.
Yeah, and he points out the cloud that isn't moving.
I haven't really thought much about that, but that is really interesting that there's a cloud that doesn't move.
Right, that's how it hides itself.
Almost like a still image.
Yeah. But do you remember... When that really happened, what he's talking about, the
they
military...
They released a bunch of stuff, but then he said they changed the letters, the acronyms, so nobody would care.
Right. I literally remember the exact day it happened because it was the beginning of the pandemic. At work, I was asked to do something that was not what was my job at that point. So I remember where I was. I remember reading it that day and being like, this is crazy. And this would be top news if it weren't the beginning of a pandemic.
Right.
And it's so interesting that like he kind of brings that up in a way. But it's weird because, you know what, the world really hasn't changed that much. But military people being like, yeah, we see shit all the time. I'm sorry, we don't know what the fuck it is. We do see shit.
Who was it? Was it Obama or Hillary? Somebody who either was president or was running for president recently was the first person to ever acknowledge, like, yeah, there are UFOs. We see them a lot.
Yeah. The military sees them all the time.
Yeah.
It's bananas.
Yeah. Man. I don't know. Like, this is making me want to watch it again because I feel like there's a lot. I'm thinking about that cloud. How would it control a cloud?
Right. And that's so cinematic.
There's a cloud
itself.
That's not moving, we should explain.
Right.
Above a mountain,
right?
Right.
Like, they're, when they're looking at the footage, they're like trying to find images of the what they think is a UFO. And then eventually, like, no, look at that one cloud. That cloud doesn't move.
It's like that's its
nest.
And
that's where it is. Yeah. Or that's how it hides itself.
Yeah. It's weird.
It's weird, but in terms of, like, visuals and cinema and stuff... Oh, by the way, I'm just thinking now, Wizard of Oz, the way it sucks you up reminds me of the Twister in Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
The way the house is sucked up.
Yeah, you're right. What about the part when, at Jupiter's Landing where they got the little audience there?
Yeah.
And then the wife is like, oh, they're putting on a good show for us today.
Yeah.
Like SeaWorld or something. It's so...
Oh, yeah.
I thought that line was so good.
Some people have made that connection, like, oh, it's like Blackfish. Because remember, Blackfish was about a killer whale that flipped out and killed its fucking... It just got sick of being a slave and just killed people.
Yeah. But the fact that it's like, oh, they're performing for us.
Yeah, yeah. It's so, it is interesting. Going back to the Gordy thing, it's interesting because typically in cinema, monkeys are cute. We love monkeys, right? Oh, it's a cute monkey. Other than like Planet of the Apes, right? Even the sitcom is like, oh, they live with a monkey. And like what you're seeing is that moment that happens in reality where it's like, no, they're not this cute thing. They are a part of nature.
And they're incredibly intelligent.
It's, yeah. Well, it's like, did you watch the last season of Pen 15?
No, I didn't.
There's a moment in the last season of Pen 15 where they have a hamster, right? And then they meet a stray dog and they're like, be friends with the hamster. And it's like so sweet. And then the dog eats the hamster. Oh, no. And they're like, ah! And they're just like screaming. And it's and it's like, yeah, the dog's going to eat the hamster.
Yeah, these are animals.
A balloon it doesn't know what's going on. It's in a fucking sitcom. A balloon popped. It freaked the fuck out.
Right. I wonder, I'd be really interested to find out if he really does sign what happened to family.
Yeah, I know. Because
that would make him so sympathetic in my eyes.
Yeah. That would mean
he thinks of them as his family.
Right. And also, like, maybe he didn't. We didn't talk about the shoe. Is the shoe just oddly just standing that way, or is there something magical happening?
I was thinking about why you guys were talking, and I was hoping you'd come back. OJ brings up bad miracles, too. And, like, that could be a bad miracle.
A bad miracle.
Like, if he was staring at the shoe, that kept him alive.
Right, right.
Like, everyone else had to die.
Right, right, right. Interesting, yeah. Right, he's like, what do you call a bad miracle?
Yeah, I didn't even remember that. Yeah, because there is something about it that is like miraculous. Like,
right.
This little detail that you wouldn't even notice until the camera zooms in on it. It's like, oh, all this other horrible shit is going on, but also this shoe is standing up at an impossible angle.
Right.
It's really, I mean, he's a genius.
Right. He's very good. I'm so glad that he made another good movie because I was so disappointed by Us. And I was like, oh, I hope he's not just one hit wonder. And you also
don't love the new Twilight Zone. You don't really love either, yeah. Right? Do you think he's going to continue?
Yeah.
I know he'll continue making movies, but do you think this is him branching now, like Spielberg, like moving to other genres? I could see him branching,
although I could see him still doing a few more horror movies. His public persona is itself such an interesting thing. The way he's changed himself, like now he always wears the glasses and he has the big beard. And it's like he's really turned himself into auteur filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is wild.
Because he's a comedian.
He was a sketch comedian. He was fucking...
what's so interesting is... Not so much in Us, because interestingly enough, Us doesn't really, I don't think, thematically like comment on race very much. At least not that I remember. But
in some ways, right? I mean, there's the distinction between Tim Heidecker's like family and they're like the white bougie family and their family.
Yes, yes.
And like how they kind of get along with each other and stuff.
Yes. But Get Out and Nope, both. In a horror way, comment on race in the same way that like the Key and Peele skits comedically commented on race.
Right, he's still thinking about the same shit.
Right, right.
Right, no, it's still...
And there is, we've talked about this before many times, but there is a close relationship between comedy and horror.
Right.
A lot of...
Because it's visceral, it's automatic body reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The name of the... his name is Ricky Jupiter. The name of the director of photography that they hired to get the image is named Antlers Hoist, which is interesting.
He reminds me of, like, the Tiger King guy.
Yeah, yeah,
what
yeah.
What was his name?
Joe Exotic.
No, the filmmaker-y guy.
Oh, I don't remember.
Didn't it sound like Antlers Hoist or something?
Doc something.
Yeah.
That was the other guy.
Yeah, Doc Antler.
You know, part of me, I think, resists a little bit trying to make this all a movie about movies, just because as, like, someone who was a cinema student and, like, read a lot about cinema and learned about cinema, it's very exciting when you're young to, like, see a movie about a movie, but at some point it feels like you're just up your own ass. And movies about movies, like when you're like, oh, it's a movie about movies. Like, that's very exciting when you're 19. But.
Well, I said this, there are a million undergraduate cinema papers were just born.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there's something interesting about his titles, too, by the way. Get Out. Because you think when you first hear Get Out, you think it's like Get Out of Our Neighborhood. But it's actually a good person saying to the protagonist, get out to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then Us is kind of obvious. But then this one's Nope.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting title for it.
I know. I was thinking about that. I was thinking today, like, is that a bad title or is it a good title?
I mean, it certainly sticks in your...
It does. It stands out.
Yeah.
And there is that thing of, like, nope, I'm not... That's too scary. Right, I think that's what he was going for.
Well, there's the old... And this was a Key and Peele sketch that made fun of this. There's the old stereotype that African-Americans talk to the audience. And so African-Americans in a film theater will talk to the screen.
Which he joked about, he said, when he went to see Get Out with an audience.
Right, right.
He was joking about that.
It's almost like he's making the characters do it.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of you going, don't go in there, or don't do that, he has the characters going, nope, nope, nope.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So it's almost like he's giving that voice to the yeah. African-American characters and taking it out of the people in the theater.
Yeah.
The Key and Peele sketch was like, it starts off like the way you think it would, and then they're like saying really interesting cinematic things like, do not go into a dolly shot, that is such an overused composition. And it's just all like really smart film shit that they're saying. It's
not a Planet Earth. Who thought of that?
Some fucking
that's
nerd.
That's quite a backronym.
Yeah And he was like, no,
because it is of Planet Earth. That's the thing. Like, isn't it just an animal that we just don't know about?
Yeah, like, there's nothing that really says it's alien.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It's just something that lives in the mountains.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to remember the news. We see a news report reporting on what happened to everyone at Jupiter's claim.
They said they went missing.
They went missing.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting, because getting back to that thing of, like, you can't capture it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there are things that are uncapturable, unfilmable.
Right.
And or if you do get it, it will never be right. It'll never look right. People will say you made it up. Like the fact that,
what if it's God, man?
Oh, man. What if it's like,
you can't capture God.
What if it's like the people on the ground or the audience, and like the monster is the movie theater, man? Yeah.
So good. Great performances. I really, really, really loved it.
Yeah. Keke Palmer is very good.
She's amazing.
She's very, very fun. And she brought out a levity.
She did. She's so good. And she's also like, she's a great actress, but also she's just the meme queen.
Yeah.
Like,
she has
so many memes. Like, the best one of all time is, I don't know, Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
I don't know who this man is. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to this man.
Yeah. I love that no matter what's happening in the movie, she's still smoking weed.
Yeah.
Like the world's ending, that she's like still smoking.
Really great soundtrack too. Like when she plays music.
Yeah. And he's so good. I mean, he's such a good filmmaker in terms of like when he has Sunglasses at Night being played in that van.
Yes.
But it slows down. It's like, yeah. It's so... Again, it's like perfect uncanny. It's like it's taking this thing that we know and it's like making it so weird.
I know.
Yeah. And it's interesting that like it does fuck with electricity, because it almost, it doesn't allow itself to be.
Yeah. To be captured.
Yeah. Yeah.
It almost makes you think like, is that a conscious choice? Like, can it consciously turn off electricity?
Well, that's interesting, right? Like, that's why I kind of want to see it again, because I want to. At first, you're not assigning agency to it because you think it's a ship. You think it's a vessel.
Right.
And he's really good in the first half of the movie of like only seeing it in the corner, only seeing like a little bit of it. And you'd be like, oh, shit. And it's not to the end when it's like coming low that you're like, oh, this is like a beast. So it's interesting to go back and think of it with agency.
Well, first you see it move very fluidly. And then he says it doesn't move like a ship.
Yeah.
And then when you see it close enough, you see that it's like fleshy.
Yeah. It's gray, but it looks like a stingray or something.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I would be so surprised if it wasn't at least partially modeled on a stingray.
Yeah.
Because that's what's... And stingrays also suck up their food from the bottom.
I see. I wasn't aware of
that.
And
then they spit out anything that they can't digest.
But what's interesting about that is animals that eat like that are bottom feeders.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's one of the... It's this thing like with like King Kong or Godzilla where
we're
like...
We're nothing.
Right. Like, we think we're so great, but we're like, we're absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And of course, we're close genetically to chimpanzee, right? Our closest cousins are chimpanzees and bonobos. So what happens to Gordy is similar to like, I guess, what could happen to any of us.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's deep.
Trippy.
It's trippy. It's deep.
Go see it. Take the whole fam.
Go. No, don't take the whole fam. That's a horrible idea.
Take the kids. If I were a child seeing this movie, I would have been terrified and traumatized.
I would have cried until like 20 minutes into it. Our father angrily would just pick me up and take me out of the movie and be angry all day. Yeah. It does for being outside anywhere for what Jaws did to the beach.
Well, like big open spaces.
It is very, you know, the more I think about it, the more I do see Jaws in it.
Yeah. And maybe even, now that you just said that, maybe even a little COVID commentary too.
Yeah. Well, I feel like COVID is like in the DNA of everything that's being made.
It is. Like, I think we'll look back at things and be like, oh, there's COVID's influence. We didn't even realize it at the time.
Right.
Because COVID does have that weird thing of like, we were told to stay inside because outside was safer than inside. But like outside was safer than inside for catching it. But you were also told to stay home and not go out.
Right.
So it was like that weird thing of like you don't feel safe inside or outside.
Right. And I'm trying to remember, does the film make...
The collective trauma of COVID has not sunk in yet.
No. Did the film have any direct references to COVID?
No. I don't think so. I think it would have... Anytime anything directly references COVID, it always stands out to me.
Right.
And it definitely didn't because I would have remembered it.
Right. But it's interesting because I don't think it's trying to say COVID didn't happen because like they're making reference, like contemporary references to now.
Right.
Like,
I mean, it could just be like the time we're living in now where like it's still a thing, but not.
It makes me wonder if like if you were writing it pre-COVID, if COVID happening made him rewrite it in a different way.
Yeah.
He's great with music. Like I think about like in the trailer too, or in the whole movie of Us, the five on it.
Yeah.
Like the way he like takes that R&B song and makes it scary.
Well, yeah, he does. Like he's good at taking like pop songs and making them eerie.
Right. Spectacle is vile.
What's that thing that, isn't there something about, isn't there like a quote about the spectacle? Or maybe I'm thinking of something else. I don't know. The medium is the message. There you go.
All right. That's enough of that. This has been PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Buongiorno. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Guys, PCMC comes out every Wednesday, ever. It never doesn't come out. Every goddamn Wednesday.
Have you ever missed a Wednesday?
No. Never. Nope. I have not ever missed a Wednesday. We are your number one podcast for non-toxic fandom, media culture, and pop culture ephemera. We end every episode by saying...
Go bye-bye.